Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Ruchiryo Bhagavan Brahman.
Ruchiryo Bhagavan Brahman.
Dakshova Brahmanakshutah.
Dakshova Brahmanasutah.
Yatasasarjabhutani.
Yatasasarjabhutani.
Labdhva bharyam jamanavim.
Labdhva bharyam jamanavim.
Ruchiryo Bhagavan Brahman.
Ruchiryo Bhagavan Brahman.
Dakshova Brahmanaksutah.
Dakshova Brahmanaksutah.
Yatasasarjabhutani.
Yatasasarjabhutani.
Labdhva bharyam jamanavim.
Labdhva bharyam jamanavim.
Ruchihi.
Ruchi.
Yatyaha.
Yatyaha.
Who?
Who?
Bhagavan.
Bhagavan.
Worshipful.
Worshipful.
Brahman.
Brahman.
O holy sage.
O holy sage.
Dakshaha.
Dakshaha.
Daksha.
Daksha.
Va.
Va.
And.
And.
Brahmanaha.
Brahmanaha.
Of Lord Brahma.
Of Lord Brahma.
Suttaha.
Suttaha.
The sun.
The sun.
Yatha.
Yatha.
In what way?
In what way?
Sasarja.
Sasarja.
Generated.
Generated.
Bhutani.
Bhutani.
Offspring.
Offspring.
Labdhva.
Labdhva.
After securing.
After securing.
Bharyam.
Bharyam.
As their wives.
As their wives.
Cha.
Cha.
And.
And.
Manavim.
Manavim.
The daughters of Swayambhuva Manu. Translation. O holy sage, tell me how the worshipful Ruchi and Daksha, the son of Brahma, generated children after securing their wives, securing as their wives the other two daughters of Swayambhuva Manu. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. All the great personalities who increase the population in the beginning of the creation are called Prajapatis. Brahma is also known as Prajapati, as were some of his later sons. Swayambhuva Manu is also known as Prajapati, as is Daksha, another son of Brahma. Swayambhuva Manu had two daughters. He had three daughters, but two of them, Devahuti is also previously asked about. So now two additional daughters, Akuti and Prasuti. The Prajapati Ruchi married Akuti, and Daksha married Prasuti. These couples and their children produced immense numbers of children to populate the entire universe. Vidura's inquiry was, quote, how did they begin the population in the beginning? I'm going to read one more verse also, text number 6. Maitreya Uvacha Praja Srijeti Bhagavan Kardamo Brahmano Didaha Sarasvatyam tapaste pe sahasranam samadashaha. The great sage Maitreya replied, commanded by Lord Brahma to beget children in the worlds, the worshipful Kardama Muni practiced penance on the bank of the river Sarasvati for a period of 10,000 years. purport. It is understood herein that Kardamuni meditated in yoga for 10,000 years before attaining perfection. Similarly, we have information that Valmiki Muni also practiced yoga meditation for 60,000 years before attaining perfection. Therefore, yoga practice can be successfully performed by persons who have a very long duration of life, such as 100,000 years. In that way, it is possible to have perfection of yoga. Otherwise, there is no possibility of attaining the real perfection. Following the regulations, controlling the senses, and practicing the different sitting postures are merely the preliminary practices. We do not know how people can be captivated by the bogus yoga system, in which it is stated simply by meditating 15 minutes daily one can attain the perfection of becoming one with God. Harumph. This age, Kali Yuga, is the age of bluffing and quarrel. Actually, there is no possibility of attaining yoga perfection by such paltry proposals. The Vedic literature, for emphasis, clearly states three times that in this age of Kali, Kalo Nasjeva, 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 there is no other alternative, no other alternative, no other alternative than Harir Nama, chanting the holy name of the Lord. End of purport. Okay, so this is chapter 21, titled Conversations Between Manu and Kardama. Manu is Swayambhuva Manu, and Kardama is the would-be son-in-law. In fact, he ends up the son-in-law of Swayambhuva Manu. And it's the prelude to a whole long description of Kardama Muni and Devahuti's marriage, how they lived their life for a long period of time in asceticism, and then Kardama Muni by mystic yoga producing an aerial city, not just like a house or a mansion or a palace, but a city. Just by, you know, by mystic power. And traveling about with his wife. Children were produced, one of them, Lord Kapila Dev, and the whole Kapila Dev's teaching to Manu. So the thread goes back and back to the verses that were not discussed yet. We discussed just previous this week in the Bhagavatam class where the third canto dialogue is Vidura placing questions before Maitreya. That goes back to the beginning of this third canto where Vidura is on pilgrimage. We know that from the first canto. He was insulted by Duryodhana, and so he left the palace and was going on pilgrimage. In the course of his pilgrimage, Vidura happened to be in Mahavan, a place in Vrindavan. And when he was there in Mahavan, he met, of all people, Uddhava. And it was just after Krishna spoke Uddhava Gita, and then Krishna left. Just after. Because Krishna gave an instruction to Uddhava so that he could sustain his life, he would have something to do. He told him, I wanted to give my association to my devotees. That's why I appeared in this world. But one group of devotees I didn't get to see yet was the devotees of Naranarayan Rishi in Badrinath, So I want you to go there and share with them everything that I said, and that way you can give my association to them that sustained his life. Krishna had just left. It was still like before nightfall. Just left. And Akura just happened to like, oh, look who's here in Mahabhan. Uddhava. And so he began asking about Krishna from Uddhava, because Uddhava is so intimately connected to Krishna. And so many questions, and then 2.5 chapters of Uddhava just pouring out his heart. Krishna just left. And descriptions of Krishna and 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 Krishna. And went through the whole night. And Uddhava said, I have to go now. Because Krishna has given me some instruction. I have to go to Badrinath. But before Krishna left, he mentioned you, Vidura, and said he wanted Maitreya to share the same teaching with you. Krishna thought of you just before he left this world. So now you come, and you should find Maitreya, because Maitreya has some service to teach you what he heard from Krishna. So go find Maitreya. So he went searching, you know, how do you, like, didn't have a map, didn't have a, what do you call those little things?
GPS.
Didn't have, you know, nothing. Didn't have a phone number. How do you go looking for Maitreya? But he went looking for Maitreya. And he found him in Haridwar. And he then presented a number of questions. The chapters preceding this have a lot to do with the first initial questions of Vidura about the Lord, specific to how he creates, but not just like, you know, what's the technology of the whole thing. How to understand the presence of the Lord within all things that are created. So, Maitreya is very happy. He supplies that understanding, not just information, but, you know, he gives them that realization of Krishna's presence within everything that's created. But some of the questions he also asked, Vidura, are now being expanded in this chapter. He wanted to know about, after Krishna appeared in this place that he created, after Krishna created, how did he arrange the lineages of kings, particularly from the Manus? So it's another of the principal topics of the Bhagavatam, the Manvantar avatars, the lineages of kings from Manu. And so that's what chapter 21 is. Vidura asks, you spoke about Svayambhuva Manu, and because with creation, he describes creation, then he describes the sub-creation, what Brahma does, and part of what Brahma does is he ranges for the maintenance of the creation. He does that whimsical, just like create and walk away and say, you know, Hari Bol. He created and he saw to its upkeep, and the upkeep is through the agency of the Manus and their teachings. So the first of the Manus is Svayambhuva Manu, and Svayambhuva Manu had two sons and three daughters, Uttanapada and Priyabrata, and Devahuti, Prasuti, and Akuti. They all sound similar. Devahuti, Prasuti, and Akuti. So he's asking, can you please describe that lineage of, because they produced Praja. Praja means descendants or offspring. And the one who produces praja is a prajapati, the father of the praja. So Brahma is called, we just heard, Brahma is called Prajapati, and Swayambhuva Manu is called Prajapati, and the sons of Swayambhuva Manu, some of them also called Prajapati, sons of Brahma, like Daksha, one of them, and others were also called Prajapati. So he wants to know, at the very beginning, you know, was it a primordial soup, or you know, what was it? What happened? Was it a big bang, or you know, what was it? How did they produce, how did the population come into being? Did they evolve from monkeys, or how did it work? So this is the Vedic version of how it worked. He's not interested in you know, the gossip column. Hey, he married her and she married him. Hey, what was that like? That's not what he wants to know. He wants to know the... Because his questions in the beginning part of the third canto are very clear. His focus is upon the personality of Godhead and the personality of Godhead's relationship with all things that unfold by his arrangement. So, in this morning's verse, well, in the previous verse, he's already asked about Kardama Muni and Devahuti. And can you explain more of this combination, Kardama Muni, Devahuti, particularly because an incarnation of the Lord has come from them? But please describe their situation, because again, in the previous verse, both of them are extremely elevated. Devahuti was expert in each of the eightfold yoga system. Not only she could do like really good asanas, she was perfected in all, you know, dhyan, dharana, and samadhi. She was highly qualified. And her husband, Kardama Muni, beyond qualified in the Eightfold Yoga system, he was perfected in the siddhis. And he was a great devotee. So I'd like to hear something about that situation. And this morning's verse is, and it's not like an oh, by the way, but it's, you know, the other two daughters of Swayambhuva Manu, Akuti and Prasuti, they were also very qualified, and they were married in addition to Prajapati Daksha, the son of Lord Brahma, married Prasuti, and Prajapati Ruchi, whose name is mentioned here, both Ruchi and Daksha, married Akuti. And between the two, Ruchi and his wife, Akuti, and Daksha and Prasuti, the universe was populated, not just, you know, a couple of children. The universe was populated. That was their service. And so, can you describe, Prabhupada, in the purport is paraphrasing, how did they beget the population within this universe in the beginning? Something that Stephen Hawking should read. So, the next verse that's not on the board is text 6. Maitreya replies that he starts describing this is going to go on for like 8 or 9 chapters, so this is like the springboard to go off into that other topic of the elevated quality of Kardama, because Kardama Muni married Devahuti. So before the marriage of Devahuti, she heard of the renown of Kardama Muni. The renown of Kardama Muni, we're going to hear in this chapter, is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes before him, like descends on Garuda and is standing before Kardama Muni, and they have a little conversation. Kardama Muni is like, and the Supreme Lord is very pleased and tells him what's going to happen, what's the future of his life going to be. So he's a great mystic. He's a great devotee. Devotees can be mystics too, but you know, this is Satya Yuga, and the emphasis that Prabhupada is placing is the period of time necessary to achieve perfection through the yoga system. 10,000 years. And Valmiki, 60,000 years. Anybody have a spare 10,000 or 60,000 years to? So, you know, most people are not interested in the perfection of the yoga system. They're interested in something else. Feeling good and, you know, and so forth, healthy and lose some weight and whatever, you know, maybe peaceful mind, benefits from the yoga system. And it's, as we all know, it's becoming very popular. There's no commitment to God. You can just feel good and be healthy and no commitment to God. It's fine, you know, non-threatening. And for that matter, you know, kirtan, no commitment to God, like in a contemporary sense, because yoga centers are becoming, you know, very popular places for kirtan. No commitment to God, just, you know, feel good. It's something about it and you feel good. It's okay. Let's include that in our yoga class. But Prabhupada is saying, we do not know how people can be captivated by the bogus yoga system, in which it is stated that simply by meditating 15 minutes daily, one can attain the perfection of becoming one with God. Because at the time, that was, without mentioning names, that was one person, called himself a yogi, who was going around saying like that, here's a mantra, give me X dollars, do this for 15 minutes in the morning and evening, and bingo, you become God. Huh? Anyway. So, Prabhupada wasn't very pleased with that approach. And from the Bhagavatam we can understand such a qualified person, what to speak of people of Kali Yuga. This is Satya Yuga, this is Kardama Muni, and 10,000 years. So he did that on the command of Lord Brahma. The command of Lord Brahma was produce praja. The command of Brahma wasn't go off to the forest for 10,000 years. That sounds like a punishment or something. It was to qualify himself to do the service that he was asked. He understood he had to do certain things, like control the mind and control the senses. And this is Satya Yuga. This isn't Kali Yuga, control the mind and senses, impossible. But this is Satya Yuga, control the mind and senses. So, in the purport, Prabhupada is making the emphasis on the Brihad Naradiya Purana verse, Kalo Nascheva, Nascheva, Nascheva Gatiranyata, guess what? We also have to control our mind and senses. It's not like, oh, fooey, if I just have to chant, I can do whatever I want. My mind can go wherever it wants. And no. We also have to control our mind and senses. But the control of the mind and senses is the process or the procedure is suitable for this age. The other process or procedure is not suitable for this age. But it doesn't mean we don't have to worry about control of our mind and senses. It's made simple, very accessible, as Prabhupada would say, even a child can do. Even foolish, ignorant, polluted Kali Yuga personalities can do. The status of so many births of perfectly executing varna and ashram duties, we'll know who's qualified. So even pavitra apavitrova sarvastam gatopiva, anyone is eligible, provided they're willing to take shelter of the holy name, the process of elevation. And to effectively chant the holy name, there are basic standards that must be observed. Our four regular principles, for starters. And then other things that have to do with standards of cleanliness, sama, dhamma, tapaksho, chanti, gradually evolving to the status of, by quality, a brahmana, just through the chanting of the holy name and the following of instructions that come from our scriptures and our acharyas, and carefully staying away from unwholesome association, in particular, unwholesome things like, you know, media and, you know, abusive things, and trying to, using the expression of the first canto Bhagavatam, taking dry wood and taking wet wood and making it dry, so that the dry wood can ignite. Using the metaphor, striving to frame our life in the quality of goodness as far as we can. So starting with eating, you know, what the tongue does, speaking, eating and speaking in the quality of goodness. And there's things that are appropriate for the quality of goodness in both. The quality of goodness in speaking, Prabhupada is very clear in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, speaking the truth palatably, that little adverb palatably or pleasingly is a necessary part of the mode of goodness, because, you know, our grosser conditioning says, kind of like, you know, the ugly American, in your face, here's the truth, man. I'm just speaking the truth. That's not mode of goodness. So it's challenging to abide by the truth, and it's challenging to speak the truth palatably, but that's the instruction for controlling the tongue. I'm just listening to Prabhupada explain, like, very extreme. He was saying that a brahmana by quality is, if someone comes who is a thief, and the thief says to the brahmana, do you have some money? The brahmana will say, yes, if he has money, and here's where it is, if he's asked where it is. You know, to that extreme, speaking the truth is that high standard. And in all circumstances, meaning, even if it puts one in a awkward position or difficult position or embarrassing position, you don't move from the truth, because that's what a brahmana has as a quality. And in this age of Kali, that's rare because, you know, the whole program is something else. Half-truths, covered truths. Anyway, it's pervasive in this age of Kali. So it's a challenge to be truthful to oneself, truthful in one's speech, and what one eats. The tongue has these two functions, tasting, vibrating, and taking only Krishna prasad. And Krishna prasad means those foods that can be offered to Krishna, and only those foods that can be offered to Krishna are offered to Krishna, and we take only that which is offered to Krishna. Finished. And then comes the yeah, but. Yeah, but what about this circumstance and that circumstance? It's very challenging. But if you just stay by, take only Krishna prasadam. And whoever is out there that doesn't understand that discipline of Krishna prasadam, you don't have to like in your face with them about it, but this is just a standard that I live by, however you want to make it palatable for them, or, you know, acceptable for them, or at least they shrug their shoulders and say, okay, you've got this, you're a disciplined person, that's fine. And that's for others' acceptance, and then there's our own standards, our own discipline. So control of the mind and senses is necessary. Starting with controlling of the tongue, it becomes possible to control the other senses. And control of the mind is best accomplished by chanting the holy name. Bring the mind to Krishna. And we all have experience when chanting what the mind likes to do and doesn't like to do. It's used to being all over the place, you know, the authority. And when we say to the mind, my dear mind, you're not the authority anymore. What do you mean I'm not the authority anymore? And so on. Rebellious mind doesn't want to be attentive to Krishna's program. But we continue to practice and discipline the mind through the process of chanting. And by connecting to the holy name, then not just when we're chanting, it carries over to our other activities, that thought of Krishna will also naturally arise from our hearing of the scripture and applying the teachings that we hear and hearing the holy name. And it just, the holy name comes into your mind. I'm sure everyone here has had that experience, just like a melody just comes into your mind, or you begin chanting. Just because it becomes so much a part of your life. Anyway, in course of time, the mind can also become controlled by this process of the chanting of the holy name. So much mercy is invested in that process that is not going to be the alternative, this process that's mentioned for Satya Yuga. It's not really an option for us as far as achieving what the purpose is intended. Here, Kardama Muni is being instructed by Brahma, please assist me in my service of the sub-creation. The sub-creation includes producing varieties of life within this shell of the universe that I've just created here, Lord Brahma. So it needs population. So please assist me in that service. So there, he's given some empowerment through instruction, but he's also, before commencing, he doesn't just go begin producing children or offspring, and he qualifies himself. Control of the mind, control of the senses, by an appropriate process for that age, which he was very accomplished in. So accomplished, we're going to hear shortly, that in this period of 10,000 years, he achieved spiritual perfection. The personality of Godhead descended to reciprocate and stood before him. So that's what's coming up. The talk between Karma Muni and the Supreme Lord. Then after the Supreme Lord leaves, the arrangement is Devahuti wishes to marry Karma Muni. So Swayambhuva Manu comes to see Karma Muni. That's the title of the chapter. And they have talks. Swayambhuva Manu comes to see Karma Muni deep in the forest to make this suggestion, which Karma Muni knew before it happened, it was going to happen, because the Supreme Lord informed him. He didn't give the name, Devahuti, but he described what would happen. These are very elevated personalities. They're not ordinary folks. But they're showing by their example how the process is to be applied and, you know, what our limitations are. We're not Satyuga personalities, but the principles apply. Okay, I'll end there and see if there's any discussion. Yeah?
When you were reading text 6, the Karma Muni meditating for 10,000 years and Valmiki Muni meditating for 60,000 years, it brought to mind to me Srila Prabhupada's initiation letter to myself and other devotees. Srila Prabhupada has given us a great benediction by this Krishna consciousness process. And for example, in the initiation letter, one of the things Srila Prabhupada writes is, simply by following the four regulated principles, by chanting at least 16 rounds a day, and by preaching Krishna consciousness in the best way you can, you have the golden opportunity in this lifetime to go back to Godhead. So Prabhupada is giving all of us, which includes the new disciples of the gurus within ISKCON, because the gurus within ISKCON are following Prabhupada's instruction. They're teaching Prabhupada's words, Prabhupada's message, so the new disciples have this opportunity to also go back to Godhead. This is very, very, very glorious. Prabhupada has given us a great benediction, so this has reminded me of Prabhupada's message that we have a very, very important mission in this life. And Prabhupada has oftentimes said, chant and be happy. So when we're performing devotional service, it's very simple and sublime. And Krishna consciousness is happiness. When we're not happy and we're performing devotional service, we need to examine ourselves internally. Have we're chanting, if we're chanting properly, and also if we are attached or if we're creating offenses or if we have some kind of artificial renunciation we're dealing with. So if we're unhappy somewhere in our devotional life, we have to really examine ourselves, because spirituality is really blissful. Prabhupada always said, chant and be happy. Even in my initiation letter, he said, chant and be happy. And I always think Prabhupada wants me to be happy. And whenever I do my...
Well-wishers always want to see us happy.
Yeah. I think, I know I want to be happy, and I can't contain myself sometimes, and I know I thank Srila Prabhupada. I thank Srila Prabhupada, because this is the reality. It's happiness. It's glorious. And it's wonderful.
Thank you for sharing that. Anybody else like to raise something? Yes? Chakri?
I was wondering what Guru Maharaj made it quicker. I was wondering if that was a different age.
No, same age. He's the son of Uttanapada. Uttanapada is the brother of Devahuti. So like they're contemporaries. They're the dawn of Satyuga. He was on a fast track. He was like... So it's possible in a shorter period of time. The austerities that he underwent were pretty extreme. But yeah, it's possible. Short a period of time. Same age. Alright? More? Jeffrey? Okay. Do you want to go?
Pramana, can we read about the lineages of the Prajapatis and the kings and so forth in the Bhagavatam? How do we understand? I mean, you mentioned something in the class, but I didn't understand. How can we read this and take an application point for us as we read these lineages? It's very long, and a large part of the Bhagavatam includes that. So is it just information about Krishna manifests as
Your question specifically is there application points for us mm-hmm. when there's these long lists of lineages? One is, it's real. It's not fiction. It's real. And are particularly the hearer, like in this case Vidura, he's asking the relevant questions about the personalities that are important for us to hear. You know, a list is going on, and then let's say Maharaj Parikshit or one of the receivers goes, whoa, you mentioned this. Could you expand on that a little bit? So it helps us get a sense of, out of the factual historical record, which are the parts that have some particular spiritual relevance because it's in relation to Krishna in some special way. Or at least it caught the attention of the hearer in some special way. They want to, you know, go more deeply into that topic. Like how the third canto begins in that way. Because in the first canto, as mentioned, Vidura went on pilgrimage and he heard from Maitreya. So two cantos later, the sages say, hey, that must have been a really amazing experience. Vidura, oh, so qualified. Maitreya, oh, so qualified. Their talks must have been really special. Can you describe that? You know, and then flows four cantos of the Bhagavatam. So they're flagging certain things. And thus, Prabhupada is described in the heavenly realm. Our Bhagavatam is 18,000, and the heavenly realm, I forget the number, some huge number of verses, just like more questions and more responses. The application point with lineages is it's one of the essential items. There's 10 topics. It's covered. It matches the standard of what's a Mahapurana. It's the Manus and the lineages of kings from the Manus. It's there. And the other is, it's real history. What interest does Vidura have in, you know, who married who and how many children they had? You know, we go through that, you know. I can say for myself. But because it's in relation to Krishna, it's of interest. So that's the application, another application point. These personalities have interest because it's in relation to Krishna or something that can teach us something about spiritual elevation. It's Purana, it's history.
I was wondering about Valmiki and Kandamuni, and they were like doing 60,000 and 10,000 years penance. So I was kind of thinking, what type of penance they doing for such a long time, like chanting mantras, or because they won't involve any.
Valmiki, you know what he was doing, and what Kandamuni is going to be described, but he was performing the Ashtanga Yoga system. He was, you know, reducing his sense activity and focusing his full energy and concentration upon fixing his mind upon the Supreme Lord, who then appeared before him. That was, you know, no nonsense program. No television. No internet. No, you know. No nonsense. Just
so it's like they bring the Kundalini Shakti to the forehead and they
bring. No description like that. Fixing his mind on the form of the Lord within the heart. By, you know, with complete, with the first five processes. They're identified in the previous report. Yama Niyama, the way that Prabhupada has identified it. Control of the senses, strict following of the rules and regulations, practice of the different sitting postures, control of the breath, withdrawing the senses from sense objects, concentration of the mind, meditation and self-realization. That was what he did. And you can be sure, like Dhruva, he was curtailing the eating process. He was sleeping very little. So he was, you know, mind in control, mind in sense control, and focusing on personality of Godhead within his heart. That process. In a very peaceful but very secluded place. Sacred place by the river Saraswati. That's what he did. Okay? More?
Because last year they had like a yoga class. One of my friends, she did like kind of participated. So they were like doing in the morning, concentrating the mind and everything stuff. And then she said like, they bring the Kundalini Shakti, and she did that, and then with the Guru, and she had like a lot of headaches, and she saw some light, something she said, and then with the help of the Guru again, they brought it down.
Hare Krishna. Anything else? Yes.
You were talking about truthfulness.
Yes.
Well, do you know that, especially when you said an example of Brahmana,
well, Prabhupada, I'm just repeating what Prabhupada said.
So how that can be applied in our dealings with regular active devotees or anyone? You said there shouldn't be any hiding, or it should be straightforward and truthful.
Yeah.
Could you, it was, you touched it and then you went to the prasadam topic. And
yeah, it's vibration. The tongue has two functions, speaking or vibrating, and tasting. So from vibrating, as a devotee, we have to be very circumspect about what we vibrate. Because, you know, the tongue is going, so we moderate, we observe some standards of what we vibrate. Ideally, we just vibrate spiritual sound vibration, chant the holy name 24 hours, but we have practical dealings, and our practical dealings, we speak the truth. And there's so many temptations to not speak the truth, because it's not so comfortable to speak the truth sometimes. So the training, the discipline is speak the truth, whether it's you know, comfortable or not. But then speak it pleasingly. That's even more challenging. Mm-hmm. Speaking the truth pleasingly. Because sometimes the truth is not pleasing. Anyway, what are you looking for?
I'm looking for a practical application of the specific example that you gave on the Brahmin. Where some, even a thief comes and asks you, and you say, that's right here, you can take half the money. So on a, when we're dealing with, when you're in a certain position or as a leader or something, there could be a situation where people come in asking something and you know that you can't say this one, you're hiding something. And on a practical, on a management sort of point of view, how do we take that as a manager?
Well, it, you know, we're trained as Vaishnavas, and as a Vaishnava, one must, according to circumstance, conduct oneself. So the circumstance of a Brahmana, the circumstance of a Kshatriya, the circumstance of a Vaishya are different. For example, Prabhupada speaks, for a Vaishya to say, sir, for you I make no profit. He must speak like that. He does speak like that. And for such a person, it's not detrimental. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one example in his life was, he was born in an aristocratic family, and when he graduated from his education, he was given a managing position in someone's business. And one of the first things that happened is through the accounting, he found out that somebody had not been given enough money in, you know, in exchange for they paid and they didn't get enough paid back. So he went to the person and gave him back. You know, we shortchanged you by mistake. Here's some extra money. And then the owner came to know that he did that and said, you have the wrong occupation. You have to be a teacher or something that's brahminical. Because it was just, you know, it was just his nature to be truthful. And in course of time, a judge, and then a high court judge, because of his integrity in that area. But does that mean that somebody that's of Vaishya propensity has no place in devotional service? No, or does it mean that a Vaishya should by nature be crooked and it's okay? No, the application point has a lot to do with the character of the individual. I mean, this is a practical point. There's a cloth merchant in Loy Bazaar that many of our devotees that have shops, they buy them in quantity, they go to Ganga Prasad because he's an honest man. You know, he treats people with dignity, but he doesn't, you know, the other shops, you purchase something and say, you know, can you make a set of clothes? I've had this experience. And when you're not looking, you know, okay, I'll sew you a curtain, and they give you this, you know, they give the something left over and something left over and something left over that doesn't match, hoping you don't notice it. And you walk away fried, saying, I'm never going to go back to that guy again. Because they're not honest. So, or, you know, a bank where relationships are everything. The relationship with the bank is we take your money. But, you know, bank at our place where relationships are everything. It's marketing. It's Vaishya talk. Relationships aren't everything. Getting your money is everything. You know, So how are we, the application point is, you're specifically as a manager, we don't place our hundi out on the front step. And, you know, we clear the hundi out on a regular basis because people have a tendency to steal. It's Kali Yuga. You know, in Chicago, they had to, like, buy a steel one and bolt it to the floor because three times people broke the glass, or one fellow walked out of the temple with a hundi. In New York, you know, they had to stop putting watches on Prabhupada's murti. Because every time we put even like a chintzy, cheapo, you know, off the street kind of a watch, people would steal it when we're not looking. So you just, I'm a manager, I just keep putting an endless supply of watches on Prabhupada's murti because, you know, we Prabhupada should have a watch. So managers need to make appropriate decisions. When thieves are moving about the temple, we don't say, oh, you need something to steal, I'll tell you where the valuables are so you have something good to steal. The managers have to be managers, they have to protect. But a brahmana is a brahmana. So that's in the, you know, the strict sense where the brahmana is a brahmana, the kshatriya is a kshatriya, and the vaishya is a vaishya. And in our sense, we're devotees and we have to perform the duties appropriate to that function, as called upon to do. So we protect the manager, the administrator, the leader, as you were saying, has to provide protection. I'm a rapist. Where's your women? Oh, they're right over there. I have to be honest. Prabhupada said, tell the truth. Okay, thank you very much. Business is to protect. You know, appropriate for the service that's provided. Okay?
Can I?
Sure.
Here's a question, right? My thing is specifically about dealings with others. When you talk about truthfulness, and you also mentioned in your lecture that there shouldn't be a hiding sort of, you just slightly mentioned on that point. But in the conversations with devotees and dealing with devotees, sometimes where you can naturally feel that there is some sort of hiding is going on, or there's no truthfulness. So you are mentioning that part. Is it what you're mentioning, that one should be very truthful as a devotee? Something like, you know, when you say palatable, it also includes that you should not say that.
Yeah, I mean, my mother taught me this one. If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all.
Well, these people still say.
Huh?
If the people still say something different, they have to hide the situation.
What are you getting at? You're like, you know, you're bothered by something, it seems.
No.
Sounds like. I mean, we use our discretion as much as Krishna gives us that capacity. Some things may be hurtful to another person, so we may not disclose something that an individual, by saying it, would be hurtful to them. They won't receive it in a way that's... So we can consider how to, in the right circumstance, in the right time, in the right manner, to say something that's going to be accepted in a good spirit, and it's not compromising the truth. So we may need to, like, invest in that relationship a bit before we can disclose something that needs to be. So we're using our discrimination.
So in that case, that's okay.
As far as I, you know, here's a Prabhupada example. Um, Hari Sori shared this with me. With men, Prabhupada would commonly be very strong in his chastisement. And he teaches that a guru must not flatter the disciple, but correct the disciple. But he would do that more with some people and less with other people, but rarely would he do it with women. Then Hari Sori was describing a situation where Prabhupada had this practice that he would perform his morning duties and then he would go take a bath, and when he came back from bath, he would sit down, chant Gayatri, and then that was when prasadam should be brought. It was like, you know, that was the standard. And the cook was in the kitchen and Hari Sori would be moving back and forth and bringing hot chapatis that were, you know, still in a balloon shape. And then they would, you know, Prabhupada would poke them with his finger. And they would, and if they weren't balloon shaped, then he let the cook know. And so, for a while, Palika was his cook. And, you know, it was, I forget the detail, but it wasn't timely, it wasn't something just right. And so he said, bring Palika. And, you know, and he blasted her. And she went out of the room crying. And he turned to Hari Sori and said, I can't do that with most women. I can do that with Palika. And it was beneficial. You know, it was helping her in a way to be a stronger devotee and accept, strong words from, because all she wanted to do was please Prabhupada, and, you know, she didn't do it right. A little detail, something. So, some people can't take it. So, you know, Prabhupada didn't issue those special moments of ecstatic exchange where he would chastise them, because some persons couldn't take it. That's just an example of using discrimination or using discretion when there's something to be said, and you may choose the right time, place, and circumstance to say it. Or you may choose to not say it, depending upon the circumstance, the person. Specifically, you use the example of a leader, so there's an example. A spiritual leader. He's, you know, our lives are fully surrendered to our spiritual master. And he would choose to speak certain ways and to certain people at certain times, and it's not like it was one thing for everybody. Although he's the one that said, you know, the standard of Brahmana is like this. He used his discretion, discrimination, time, place, circumstance. And with different audiences, he would speak different ways. Sometimes he would, like, you know, let people have it in a public forum. Sometimes he would, you know, just the opposite, speak very humbly. So, discrimination is necessary. Not only, it's an opulence, being able to properly discriminate what to speak and how to speak it in different circumstances. It's not compromising truth or truthfulness, the qualification of a Brahmin or a Vaishnava, Satyam. The question that you're raising was probing at what if somebody else does something. You know, our business is not to like micro-analyze and manage people that their responsibility of serving Krishna is their responsibility of serving Krishna. My responsibility is that I serve Krishna in an exemplary way. If somebody's uncomfortable to speak a direct manner, then, you know, let them work that out. My business is conduct my life in Krishna consciousness. If I can be of some service to this other person, I'd be glad to do that. Yes?
I'm going to have a couple of related questions. First one, I just want to make sure I understood correctly. Devaluti and Harumuni were devotees, but it's just that the age they were in, the process was, but the end is the same.
Yeah.
As devotional
service,
the process.
To amplify what you just said, the son of Karnamuni and Devahuti is Kapiladeva, who taught Sankhya philosophy, but you look closely at what he taught, and it's, you know, the Ashtanga Yoga system is included with very strong analysis, but the end is Krishna Bhakti. So it's Krishna Bhakti or Krishna Bhakti or Krishna Bhakti or the four yogas, it's Krishna Bhakti. The approach, it may be different, but their method was not sit down and chant the holy name. It's just, you know, like our process. Our process is not to go through those Ashtanga yoga things. Okay? Second?
And we hear that from devotional service, cause we see knowledge and detachment arise. And I just want to make sure I understand, when we say devotees, they don't have mystical powers and they're not after that. But everything is included.
They may have mystical powers, but they're not after that.
So they don't exhibit it, they're not interested in that stuff. Or, the other processes, not just the mystical powers, but devotees have that.
They may. If Krishna wants them to have it, they have it. If Krishna doesn't want them to have it, they're fine. And it's not a measure of someone's spiritual attainment. Oh, he's got some mystic powers. He doesn't have any mystic powers. Nice devotee, but doesn't have any mystic powers.
Chapter 18, text 47 of the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says in the business field also, sometimes the merchant has to tell so many lies to make a profit.
Yeah.
If he does not do so, there can be no profit.
Right.
The question I have, to say that lying and deceiving is the Vaishya Dharma, would that be a factual thing to say for at least this year?
Not necessarily. I gave the example of a Vaishya who, his reputation is he doesn't do that. And because he doesn't do that, people trust going to that merchant, and he's prospering like anything. But, you know, it's not like he's not interested in prospering like anything. He's a Vaishya. He wants to prosper like anything. But for him, as opposed to some of the other guys on the same street, he understands, I want to stand by just, being truthful to people. I'll tell them about the quality of this cloth and the quality of that cloth. I'm not going to lie. And by consistently doing that over time, he's garnered the faith of people that, make small and big and huge purchases. I know the Ramabhadra has told me some of those things because he buys a lot, and the LA Temple buys a lot, and so on. He's one of the main sources. So it's not that it's Vaishya Dharma to lie. It's like built in. But the other side is what you just read and I also referred to. When a Vaishya does that, you're processing. Okay, that's Vaishya talk. Now, what's the real deal? Because I have to put it through that filter. Yes.
I was just wondering, Satyuga, Kadamamuni, he did do a penances for 10,000 years. And we, as Noga said, if in one lifetime, if we follow Krishna consciousness properly, we can go to Goloka. So why this process would not include at that time, 10,000 would have reduced to 60 years? Or
Because people had a greater qualification. And so that surrender for them was a greater quantum.
Surrender in this age and
that age is different? The manner of expression is different. The principle is the same. It's just, you know, it's a different season. It's not summer. It's winter. Kali Yuga is like winter. And Satya Yuga is like, you know, spring. You know, why is it the same in the winter as it is in the spring? It's a different season. It's part of the Lord's plan. For persons who are very qualified, He gives them a means that's suitable. But as the question, one of the prior questions was, the goal is the same. Complete surrender unto the personality of God in an exchange. I mean, put in really simple language, what is coming up, what Karamuni is doing and what Kapila Deva, his son, is teaching, is a process of complete consolidation of the senses and mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engaging in his service within, on that spiritual plane. Wow. Like you're just sitting there, but you're your spiritual form, you're engaging in devotional service to the spiritual form of the Personality of Godhead within your heart. But advanced stages of chanting are like that also. We find from Rupa and Sanatana Goswami's examples. Or Bhaktivinoda Thakur's example, you know, more contemporary. But that's the means to achieve that. Anything else? Yes?
What is the background behind Valmiki meditating for 60,000 years?
What's the background? He was a dacoit. And Narada, there's a long description, but Narada gave him the name of Ram to chant. Well, actually gave him the name of Mara to chant because he couldn't chant Ram. But so by doing that, following Narada's instruction, that was his just as Dhruva, he was also meditating on his mantra while engaging in the Ashtanga Yoga system. He was meditating on his mantra, so Valmiki was doing the same. And realized the personality of Godhead, Lord Ram, in the course of that practice. That's a short version. Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Keep your time.